This is Jordan Seculo. A nation mourns as 30 Americans lose their lives in two mass shootings in the same weekend in our country. We'll discuss it today in the president's remarks on Jay Seculo Live.
Live from Washington, D.C., Jay Seculo Live.
The First Lady and I join all Americans in praying and grieving for the victims, their families, and the survivors. We will stand by their side forever. We will never forget. Our hearts are shattered for every family whose parents, children, husbands, and wives were ripped from their arms and their lives. America weeps for the fallen.
And now, your host, Jordan Seculo.
Welcome to Jay Seculo Live, and it is a time to mourn. It's a time to think, and ultimately a time for action in the United States of America after what is just a horrendous weekend of violence, of Americans turning assault weapons on other Americans. First, we saw it in El Paso near a shopping mall, but then specifically a Walmart, where a 21-year-old white male, white supremacist, the death toll has now gone up. You may not have just seen it. It's just now breaking as we're on the air. He has killed 21 and injured 26. Then on late in the early morning hours of Monday, but really Sunday evening in Dayton, Ohio, a 24-year-old white male kills 9 and injures 27 in just 30 seconds with an assault rifle. 30 seconds until he was shot and neutralized by police. But he was able to inflict that much damage with an assault rifle. I think we have to have a real conversation in our country. First, we know from that just horrific event in El Paso that the issue of white nationalism, which the president and white supremacy and racism has condemned, and I think it's very important to hear the president in his own words this morning speaking from the White House. Take a listen, bite number 10.
The shooter in El Paso posted a manifesto online consumed by racist hate. In one voice, our nation must condemn racism, bigotry, and white supremacy. These sinister ideologies must be defeated. Hate has no place in America. Hatred warps the mind, ravages the heart, and devours the soul.
I think powerful words there from President Trump denouncing again racism, bigotry, white supremacy, and how these ideologies have to be defeated. The question is the best way to defeat them and the best way in the meantime to protect Americans from those who harbor these ideologies and are willing, because of either mental health reasons or just absolute hatred, which probably also ties to mental health reasons as well, are willing to put on body armor to only to prolong their life, knowing that they will die in a firefight, but to inflict what in El Paso was just to, quote, kill Mexicans, is what was told to law enforcement officials. And again, most of those people who may have been of Mexican origin were American citizens. They were Americans who were gunned down because of their nationality or the color of their skin. It is a racist attack by a white supremacist. And in Dayton, it's a little bit more complicated. It is a white male there. The politics that he held are a little more complicated as well. He was kind of like a left-wing radical, but it looks more that there were some more personal elements there as well. That doesn't take away from the massive loss of life there as well. 9 killed. 27 injured, 30 total just this weekend, Americans lost to gun violence. We have got to start tackling this problem in a bipartisan way, take politics out of it, take all of the just the straight up right versus left, have the real conversation and get to action. Give us a call. What would you advise Congress and the president to do? 1-800-684-3110, because I don't think we have time to wait. 1-800-684-3110.
At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're engaged in critical issues at home and abroad. Whether it's defending religious freedom, protecting those who are persecuted for their faith, uncovering corruption in the Washington bureaucracy, and fighting to protect life in the courts and in Congress, the ACLJ would not be able to do any of this without your support. For that, we are grateful. Now there's an opportunity for you to help in a unique way. For a limited time, you can participate in the ACLJ's Matching Challenge. For every dollar you donate, it will be matched. A $10 gift becomes $20. A $50 gift becomes $100. This is a critical time for the ACLJ. The work we do simply would not occur without your generous support. Take part in our matching challenge today. You can make a difference in the work we do, protecting the constitutional and religious freedoms that are most important to you and your family. Give a gift today online at aclj.org. Only when a society can agree that the most vulnerable and voiceless deserve to be protected is there any hope for that culture to survive. And that's exactly what you are saying when you stand with the American Center for Law and Justice to defend the right to life. We've created a free, powerful publication offering a panoramic view of the ACLJ's battle for the unborn. It's called Mission Life. It will show you how you are personally impacting the pro-life battle through your support. And the publication includes a look at all major ACLJ pro-life cases, how we're fighting for the rights of pro-life activists, the ramifications of Roe v. Wade 40 years later, Planned Parenthood's role in the abortion industry, and what Obamacare means to the pro-life movement. Discover the many ways your membership with the ACLJ is empowering the right to life. Request your free copy of Mission Life today online at aclj.org/gift.
This is where I think the urgency comes in, not because it's a presidential election coming up and there's lots of rhetoric, though that can certainly heighten tensions in the country. And again, we're a country of vigorous debate. We should be able to handle that. I think placing blame on people is very dangerous as well. And so I think all around what we can all realize is that as a country, we need to do better. Republicans and Democrats, liberals and conservatives, Congress needs to do a better job. States need to do a better job as well. And law enforcement and individuals working with law enforcement need to understand what they can and can't do when they are notified about individuals who may have these kind of motives. And mental health professionals, what can they do when they feel like a patient has crossed the line? Much like in the legal profession where you can defend someone who has committed a crime, but you cannot aid them in committing another crime. So if you feel like they are about to do something else illegal, the attorney-client privilege there is no longer in place. Or if they're in the middle of a criminal activity that you are aware of. And so again, I think that mental health professionals have got to be clarified there as well. It's a difficult call to make before someone who's, you know, using words and may not be acting out and then ultimately does act out. But what the president did say clearly in the remarks is that we've got to deal with this rising new white supremacy. I mean, we saw that in Pittsburgh, the attack on the synagogue there, where a 46-year-old male anti-Semite killed 11 Jewish members of the Pittsburgh community at their synagogue, injured 6. So this is not just, focused in on one, you know, racial group that's being targeted. But again, this scourge yet again, which our country has had to deal with before, of white supremacy or white nationalism. It has happened throughout our history. It is something we have dealt with. And it seems to kind of come to different boiling points at different times. Again, I want to take your phone calls, 1-800-684-3110. That's 1-800-684-3110. There's another reason I think that there is a urgent call to action here. All of us, as I'm talking to you, you know, my daughter's preparing for preschool soon. Some schools are already going back. So then we've got to deal with those situations as well. And we don't want to forget, what's happened in Santa Fe High School or Parkland or again, these other attacks we've seen at schools, which have been just, you know, horrendous as well over the past, you know, year and a half. And so as students prepare to go back to school, I think there is an urgency. I'll go to Than Bennett, our director of government affairs. Than, I know you're in the same situation. I mean, that is where it gets most concerning, is when you see back-to-back incidents like this. We saw this at that garlic festival where three people were killed, 12 injured. The individual there, a male, 19 years old, had literature from both the far left and far right, so kind of extremist literature. But, I mean, these were happening within, again, just the same, within a week. Three instances.
Yeah, I mean, all of these situations, Jordan, are heartbreaking. But you're right. As a father, I look at these situations where innocent children are among the slaughtered, and of course, it just doubles down on the heartbreak. And you're right. I don't think much has been done since last year in making sure that our schools are safe places for our children to go to. And these are issues that we'll have to continue to confront. Here's the problem I have, though, Jordan. I mean, whenever we see this, we see a rush on really both sides of this political spectrum. We see a rush on the right to defend a constitutional right without exception. On the left, we see a rush to enact preferred gun control laws. And Jordan, really neither approach brings us closer to actually reducing the number of times that we have to face these situations. I just think we need to get to a place on this issue, which is really domestic terrorism. I mean, let's call it for what it is. When we think about international terrorism, there seems to be a little bit more of an ability to talk about the issue based on merit. I don't see that on this issue, Jordan. I think we need to get to a place where elected officials on both sides of the political spectrum can have a debate, not based on a political position, but on merit, and let the best ideas rise. Jordan, you're right. As we head towards the fall, I mean, right now, as tragic as these situations are, they're generally happening in public places. Our schools are about to open, and many of them, Jordan, they're not as secure as they need to be.
Cindy on Facebook wrote in, "Our country must be called to action. President Trump has called the FBI to take further action. Take a listen, Bite 11.
We have asked the FBI to identify all further resources they need to investigate and disrupt hate crimes and domestic terrorism, whatever they need. We must recognize that the internet has provided a dangerous avenue to radicalize, disturb minds, and perform demented acts. We must shine light on the dark recesses of the internet and stop mass murders before they start."
You know, I mean, I think right there, again, opening up the full resources of our federal law enforcement agencies, as well in partnership with local law enforcement, to identify these websites that host this information, to disrupt that information, and again, to shine light on them. Because oftentimes, most of these individuals are doing this very anonymously online because they are ashamed. They're actually ashamed of their views, or they're not so tough when they actually have to defend it publicly. Now, that there are those who go the extra step in their hatred and then commit these kind of violent attacks like we saw in El Paso. I mean, an absolute massacre. And I think about my daughter, and you read about a two-year-old girl being killed. I mean, I don't care where you are on the guns rights, Second Amendment issue. That is heartbreaking. Mothers being killed, shielding their children, and a person just opening fire to kill as many people as possible because of their color of their skin or their nation of origin, regardless if they were Americans or not. And most of them were Americans. And so I think it's twofold. And I want to get your thoughts on this, 1-800-684-3110. This may be controversial to some. I think it should be probably tougher to get an assault weapon, especially when you're 19 years old, and there can be better background check systems. The president tweeted, he didn't mention it this morning, but he tweeted about the potential of a universal background check system. Again, that wouldn't stop or prevent anybody who's listening right now from being able to, if they want to, purchase these kind of weapons lawfully. And there's also the gun show loophole discussion as well, and the seller to seller without having to do background checks. But in these cases, I think to add to that is the mental health component, the most difficult. I think you can pass the background checks, you can pass this and that, but what will come up on those background checks if someone has had these red flag moments, but they may not have risen to the level of criminal activity, so they wouldn't prevent them from purchasing a weapon. And I think that's probably the most complicated aspect of this in a country that values the Second Amendment, and as most Americans do, and the idea of the Second Amendment, but at the same time balancing our safety and our that liberty safety balance that we are, that's constantly in struggle, and it's intentionally so in the United States of America, because to have this ultimate liberty we have, you do give up some security, but at some point you say, okay, I'm feeling too insecure, so I'm willing to give back some liberty. And we've made those decisions throughout our history. Post 9/11, we've done that, and we're seeing now how we need to correct some of that, some of the tools that we authorize the government to utilize to combat Islamic terrorism. And we're saying now, okay, maybe we need to look back at like FISA and things like that. But there are some times where you say, okay, I get that we are a liberty and security are kind of always at odds in the country, and we're designed that way. But there are times when America comes together in a pretty universal way and says, I'm willing to give up a little liberty here for more security, especially for my kids, family members. And, let's say you're a gun owner, folks. If it was your wife and kids that were at that Walmart, you weren't going to be of any help. You weren't going to be able to get there in time. People should be able to go to the store without feeling like there's going to be a mass shooting there. They should be able to go to school without feeling there's going to be a mass shooting there. But then it is just to be honest and fair to people, one of the most difficult political issues to handle in Washington, D.C., policy-wise.
It's a very hard balance to strike, Jordan. I think it starts with an admission that people are hurting across this country. Depression is a real issue, and it turns into hate. Obviously, the tricky policy question is then, who do you trust to make a determination whether or not someone is mentally unstable? Because you want to restore that person to society. At the same time, sometimes there does have to be restrictions put in place. Jordan, it's a hard question to answer, but everybody on all sides of it needs to come to the table and actually seek a solution, not just defend their own side of the issue.
Yeah, because you know what happens? If you don't do that, something extreme will occur. There will be a more extreme kind of action by Congress if this doesn't come to an end. You can't prevent every tragedy and every shooting incident, but these mass shootings, if they continue and you don't come up with a solution, there's going to be widespread reform that a lot...
Only when a society can agree that the most vulnerable and voiceless deserve to be protected is there any hope for that culture to survive. And that's exactly what you are saying when you stand with the American Center for Law and Justice to defend the right to life. We've created a free, powerful publication offering a panoramic view of the ACLJ's battle for the unborn. It's called Mission Life. It'll personally impacting the pro-life battle through your support. And the publication includes a look at all major ACLJ pro-life cases, how we're fighting for the rights of pro-life activists, the ramifications of Roe v. Wade 40 years later, Planned Parenthood's role in the abortion industry, and what Obamacare means to the pro-life movement. Discover the many ways your membership with the ACLJ is empowering the right to life. Request your free copy of Mission Life today online at aclj.org/gift. At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're engaged in critical issues at home and abroad. Whether it's defending religious freedom, protecting those who are persecuted for their faith, uncovering corruption in the Washington bureaucracy, and fighting to protect life in the courts and in Congress, the ACLJ would not be able to do any of this without your support. For that, we are grateful. Now there's an opportunity for you to help in a unique way. For a limited time, you can participate in the ACLJ's Matching Challenge. For every dollar you donate, it will be matched. A $10 gift becomes $20. A $50 gift becomes $100. This is a critical time for the ACLJ. The work we do simply would not occur without your generous support. Take part in our Matching Challenge today. You can make a difference in the work we do, protecting the constitutional and religious freedoms that are most important to you and your family. Give a gift today online at aclj.org.
Welcome back to Jay Sekulow Live, a show you never want to have to do with a nation in mourning. And it continued over the weekend. So on Saturday, 21 now people have been killed. That number just increased as we went on the air. 26 injured as a white supremacist opened fire in a Walmart in El Paso to target, quote, Mexicans. Most of those, quote unquote, Mexicans would be Americans, maybe of Mexican origin. But they were American citizens just like you, just like me, out shopping, probably getting ready for school. It was a Saturday, getting what they need, like a lot of Americans do, heading to places like Walmart, which is also near a large shopping mall there in El Paso. He kills 30, including children as young as 2 years old, and injures 26. So 56 people in total directly impacted by his gunfire. And then in Dayton, Ohio, an event that's a little more less clear about the exact motives so far. Very late in the evening, Sunday, in the early morning hours, really, of Monday, you've got nine killed and 27 injured. Those nine were killed in 30 seconds because of the assault weapon the individual had. Nine killed in 30 seconds because in 30 seconds, law enforcement had already done their job of neutralizing that shooter. I want to go to the phones, and we are taking your phone calls about this because, listen, solutions have to come from all of us because we have to support our elected officials in times when, you know, there's various lobbying groups on both sides of the aisle pushing them to do this or not do this. So it's important for Americans to come together, kind of like the president said, and tell Congress this is what you need to do. Will from Colorado on line two. Will, welcome to Jay Sekulow Live. You're on the air.
Thank you, sir. I'm going to try to do this in about 30 seconds.
Sure.
These violent anti-American murders ought to be treated and judged as domestic terrorism. We need our schools, and they should be guarded. I propose, as far as guarding our schools, possibly using veterans who swore an oath to protect the Constitution. And also to put one more note on, as far as people with mental, you know, disorders, you know, really flagging people that are mentally insane. I mean, this is just, I mean, an act of terrorism. And I think we just need to just make severe laws so that it deters people from doing this, sir.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think I agree with all of your points. I think we need to secure our schools. And unfortunately, there's pushback in some states and some school districts from securing them appropriately. I like the idea of veterans and who are looking for work to utilize the skills that they have. And they go through training and they go through psychological assessments of their own. But again, securing the schools so anybody knows it's a potential shooter like this, that they are going to be met immediately, not, you know, 30 seconds later, not a minute later, but immediately by a highly trained a professional who has, you know, served our country. Let me just say on the mental health issue as well, and then we'll get to the punishing of the domestic terrorism and classifying those kind of acts. Here is a President Trump on reforming our mental health laws so you can better identify these folks, like you have said in the call, Bite 18.
Third, we must reform our mental health laws to better identify mentally disturbed individuals who may commit acts of violence and make sure those people not only get treatment, but when necessary, involuntary confinement. Mental illness and hatred pulls the trigger, not the gun.
And, you know, I agree with that statement, and I think that is what you have to tackle. I know the president's getting pushback from some on the left already, politicizing this, saying, oh, it is the gun, and, you know, without the gun, they can't kill this many people. Listen, these kind of deranged people, yes, maybe without the assault weapon, but I think what the president's saying there is that you identify these individuals so that even if it requires involuntary confinement, so that they don't have access. And once that's on their record, they don't have access to those kind of weapons or any weapons that you would need background checks for, whether that's a handgun or an assault weapon either. There's lots of legislation pending. The problem has been it's been extremely partisan in nature. So some legislation goes too far for the right, and other legislation doesn't go far enough for the left.
Well, a couple of things, Jordan. First of all, I think the mental health issue is one that people on all sides of the gun issue should be able to come together on, because regardless of whether or not you restrict the weapon that is used, we should be able to identify those who would be willing to use it in a wrong way. So I would suggest that Congress should focus there. But you're correct, Jordan. The legislation that you're going to hear a lot about over the next couple of days is going to center around three main areas. You're going to hear about background checks. You're going to hear about an assault weapons ban. And then you're going to probably hear about red flag laws. On the background checks piece of it, Jordan, there are two pieces that have passed the House of Representatives. One that would require a background check for individual sales of firearms, and that's going to be a pretty partisan debate, most likely. There'd be a second one that passed the House that would extend the waiting period from 3 days to 10 days that a firearm dealer had to wait for a background check to clear. You're also going to hear those mainly on the left recall for a restoration of the assault weapons ban, although that may be bipartisan in some ways. And then you'll probably hear some on the right talking more about these red flag laws that you had talked about, where a family member can actually flag for law enforcement troubling signs that they are seeing in a family member, and they might be able to either take that person into custody or at least restrict their access to weapons. Jordan, all of these might be components of the debate, but here's the problem. None of them, really even all of them in their entirety, would likely have done much to curtail the attacks over the weekend or many of the attacks that we've seen. So again, they might be pieces of the puzzle, yeah. Jordan, but until we're willing to tackle all of them, and I would point you back to the mental health one, we're still talking about solutions that they might be good policy, Jordan, but they don't get us all the way to a solution. They just might make us feel good.
Yeah, I mean, so again, you know, I see in the chat too, and I think this is the problem with even what's happening in our own Facebook chat right now, is people saying, well, is it an assault weapon or is it semi-automatic, so it's not really an assault weapon? And if you can kill 21 people with little training as a 21-year-old with serious issues and a manifesto written about your white supremacy, it may be a little bit too easy. You know, I mean, wouldn't you agree with that? That may be a little bit easier than a handgun or other weapons. And so you want to have all those debates. I know it. And listen, Congress will. They'll be very specific in legislation. But when you have this knee-jerk reaction of everybody wants to take our guns, that's not what anyone is talking about. What they are talking about is, just like we talk about keeping guns out of the hands of criminals through background checks, and we try to put those background checks in place, keeping guns, especially those that can be used to commit these mass acts of murder and homicide, out of the mentally ill is also very important. And I know it can be controversial. I know it has to be very carefully done in a way that protects individual liberty, but I think it's something we can't ignore as a country, because or else we're not going to be a place where you feel safe and secure in our schools and our shopping centers. And it's around the country, if you notice. This isn't just in one area. And you can't compare this to a violent city. It has incidents of gun violence, yes, but not the same kind of mass shootings at one time. So those comparisons don't work here, folks. We'll be right back. Second half hour, Jay Sekulow Live.
At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're engaged in critical issues at home and abroad. For a limited time, you can participate in the ACLJ's Matching Challenge. For every dollar you donate, it will be matched. A $10 gift becomes $20. A $50 gift becomes $100. You can make a difference in the work we do, protecting the constitutional and religious freedoms that are most important to you and your family. Give a gift today online at aclj.org.
live from Washington, D.C., Jay Sekulow Live. And now, your host, Jordan Sekulow.
Last weekend, three killed at the Gilroy Garlic Festival by a 19-year-old, 12 injured. This weekend in El Paso, Texas, 21, the number is now jumped to, killed by a 21-year-old white supremacist, injuring 26. And then on late hours of Sunday in Dayton, Ohio, 9 killed, 27 injured. And that happened within a minute because of the weapon that was used. Law enforcement was able to neutralize that person. So, I mean, law enforcement, when you look at the response, I mean, they are responding very quickly, but they can, again, even if they respond within a minute, which is not very long, but it is a very long time when you can fire off that many rounds of ammunition and the kind of ammo utilized and focused on killing people. And again, I'm not an anti-Second Amendment someone. I'm a pro-Second Amendment person and a gun owner myself. So, I understand who you're talking to here is not someone who is trying to take away guns or thinks that or knee-jerk reaction either. I think that what we're seeing is, I mean, I just had him pull a list the last 8 years of all these kind of shootings that were not terrorism-related in the sense of Islamic terrorism or outside U.S. ideologies. And, I mean, you add these numbers up, it's absolutely horrendous. And there's things we can do about it where we still protect the American, the average American's ability to purchase the weapons they see fit and would like to purchase for their own security or for other needs or as collectors. But at the same time, these profiles are very similar. We're about to start school again. So for all of you out there who think, oh, this or oh, that, remember your kids heading into school, a lot of them unsecured. Maybe your grandkids, maybe it's that's your age, who are heading back to school soon. Most of those schools unsecured. And you may be thinking, hey, don't take away my guns, which no one is doing. But remember them. They don't have one to protect themselves. And a lot of those places, they don't have enough resources. So if this can all happen within a minute or a handful of minutes, even with law enforcement around, that may not protect them. So I think it affects all of us. It affects the nation. And I want to stay out of this, not make it about partisan politics, but I think we do have to get real. We have to get honest. We have to take it seriously. This is, again, it is a uniquely American problem. Crime is not. And violent crime is not. And gun violence is not uniquely American. But these mass shootings, yes, there are occasions where we have seen them in Europe before, driven by some kind of ideology, but it's very rare. Most of those kind of violence we've seen have been driven by Islamic extremism, which we've dealt with here in our country. But this is something unique, and I think, you know, we're a large country over, you know, with our population, so you're going to have issues that other countries don't face. But one that we're not tackling head on is certainly mental health, the stigma around that as well. And for parents of some of these who probably identified a lot of these aspects when they were still had custody of their children before they were adults, you know, they had control over decisions that could be made. But then again, it's just, there's a lot of aspects to it. When we come back, we'll start taking your phone calls about it. At 1-800-684-3110. That's 1-800-684-3110. I don't think we can do nothing. You know, I think that on the school front, we have to secure our schools better. On the mental health issues and mental health front, there's got to be things that we can do better. They're not all perfect, but better. And we have to look to it at who has the ability to purchase these kind of weapons that can be used to kill this many people in this short period of time with such limited training, how long it takes to purchase those weapons, and what kind of background checks are done to purchase them. I didn't say to ban them. 1-800-684-3110. We'll be back on Jay Sekulow Live.
Hey,
At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're engaged in critical issues at home and abroad. Whether it's defending religious freedom, protecting those who are persecuted for their faith, uncovering corruption in the Washington bureaucracy, and fighting to protect life in the courts and in Congress, the ACLJ would not be able to do any of this without your support. For that, we are grateful. Now there's an opportunity for you to help in a unique way. For a limited time, you can participate in the ACLJ's Matching Challenge. For every dollar you donate, it will be matched. A $10 gift becomes $20. A $50 gift becomes $100. This is a critical time for the ACLJ. The work we do simply would not occur without your generous support. Take part in our Matching Challenge today. You can make a difference in the work we do, protecting the constitutional and religious freedoms that are most important to you and your family. Give a gift today online at aclj.org. Only when a society can agree that the most vulnerable and voiceless deserve to be protected is there any hope for that culture to survive. And that's exactly what you are saying when you stand with the American Center for Law and Justice to defend the right to life. We've created a free, powerful publication offering a panoramic view of the ACLJ's battle for the unborn. It's called Mission Life. It will show you how you are personally impacting the pro-life battle through your support. And the publication includes a look at all major ACLJ pro-life cases, how we're fighting for the rights of pro-life activists, the ramifications of Roe v. Wade 40 years later, Planned Parenthood's role in the abortion industry, and what Obamacare means to the pro-life movement. Discover the many ways your membership with the ACLJ is empowering the right to life. Request your free copy of Mission Life today online at aclj.org/gift.
In the New York Post, which is not a liberal newspaper by any means, remember they're the same one that had the raise your hands if you want to lose the election headline. The same ones that called out Ilhan Omar controversially. They've called for a ban on weapons of war. They say, President Trump, America is scared. We need bold action, and it's time to ban weapons of war. Those are not my words. That's the New York Post. But again, not a liberal news outlet, to say the least. And so, again, I think it's important to point out all of that. I want to go to the phones, 1-800-684-3110. People have been holding on. We want to take more of your phone calls at 1-800-684-3110. Ed is calling in from New York on line one. Ed, welcome to Jay Sekulow Live. You're on the air.
Hi, Jordan. How are you?
Good.
This has been an incredible debate, and it seems like it's never going to end. But
yeah.
I just wanted to add, as I'm a gun owner. I've had a handgun carry permit in New York State since 1997.
Yep.
And I don't have a problem with further background checks. It's not going to affect me, but I think you hit the nail on the head with the mental health issues. But you're right, that's the tough side. But I don't think that we can ignore the media's role in the hatred that is in this country right now.
Well, I do think President Trump did call that out and said that the media is also stirring these partisan divides and making them worse. I mean, you see the example with Baltimore, and it was the media pounding us with, is it this? Is it racism? Is it racism? The president's a racist, and going back and forth on these issues. And instead of just discussing it, you know, as one issue and saying, yeah, we got bigger issues to fry here in the United States of America, they pounded it home. And so, again, the president tweeted out, like you said, Ed, the media, this is from President Trump, quote, the media has a big responsibility to life and safety in our country. Fake news has contributed greatly to the anger and rage that has built up over many years. News coverage has got to start being fair, balanced, and unbiased, or terrible problems will only get worse. So I do think that the media can work people up on both sides of the aisle into kind of this frenzy state. Now, most people can still get very worked up. They may scream at their TV. They may have disagreements with family members over politics and even friends over politics. But there's a big jump from that to driving 9 hours and opening fire so you can kill as many Mexicans as possible. And I think it was right for President Trump to acknowledge also the mourning in Mexico as well. though most of these were Mexican Americans. Some were here legally as working here, and again, I think that we have to understand that this is not going away. It sometimes there's longer periods of time, and let's realize a couple things. School's about to start, or has in some places. I mean, it can begin as early as I think today in some places across the country. We're national, so I don't know everybody's school by heart. So you got school about to start. Then you have people going back to universities as well. You have an election year upon us very soon, with the debates already on the Democratic side. We already had two of those, and we'll have one more in September. So the partisanship will naturally be on the rise in the country, because people will be deciding who to elect as their next president, and then on down the list goes there from other, you know, federal and state officials. So we already knew we were going to be at a heightened partisan time. And there's not much you can do about that when you've got an election year coming up. But I think what you can do is be more careful that when this happens, you know, wait a week before you politicize it. You know, at least wait a week. Talk about some real solutions. Talk about some answers. Try to heal as a nation. Give us all a week before you go on cable news and start politicizing the issue, which I saw Congressman Tim Ryan do. And Congressman Ryan, who questioned the president's mental health this morning on CNN, I mean, that plays right into it, folks. That is the kind of rhetoric that, again, questioning is the president mentally fit for office. That's what you did, Congressman Ryan. You think that was the right thing to do after 30 people have been killed over the weekend? Question the president's health? A president who, after you did that, or before you did that, called out white nationalism, said we needed to figure out these issues. And by the way, as a congressman, yes, you're running for president. Don't know how much longer you'll be on that debate stage, but you are running for president. But as a congressman, you could be part of those solutions and not just furthering divide us by calling a president that half the country at least supports, you know, having some kind of mental deficiencies, which is what he did. And to me, that's where it gets dangerous very quickly, less than 24 hours after all this has occurred, before we even know everything, you get them rushing to make statements like this. 1-800-684-3110 to talk to us on air. When I heard that this morning, I said, you know what, this is the rhetoric we're talking about. You know, calling one side mentally ill and calling the commander-in-chief mentally incompetent. Scott is calling from South Carolina online too. Scott, welcome to Jay Sekulow Live.
Hey, good afternoon. Real quick, so because I know you got your lines are packed. Sure. First of all, the mental health issue. For over a decade now, there are laws in place that allow doctors to safely notify the FBI's database about people like this with the mental issues and not be in trouble for it. The problem in a couple of those cases that you talked about, you researched, it didn't follow through. It didn't didn't come up on the background check.
Yes. Now, there's been a real problem there. I remember that shooting in Texas at the church. That person had been court-martialed in military. I mean, and it never got to the FBI. Court-martialed for violence. And yet that information, because of it was a separate legal system, had never got to the FBI, so it never got into the background check. So technically the gun store had nothing to go on but the background check, and it wasn't there. Scott, back to you.
The other issue was the red flag laws. They are in theory a good idea, but practically in use, they can be weaponized and used against people, for instance, in a divorce, or even worse, vets like me. I don't have it, but there are vets that have PTSD. That can be used against them, and that's not fair, because now you're saying I'm guilty until proven innocent.
Yeah, no, I get the concern over the abuse of red flag laws. I think anything that is implemented like that would need to have a due process, so where you're notified. And so if it was some kind of retribution because of a divorce proceeding or some kind of other legal proceeding or just a dispute you might be having with a neighbor, that you'd be notified and have time to dispute that in a way that's cost effective, that's not going to cost you a lot of money. that is not going to be a full trial, something like that. I think that those are the kind of things we have to, you put in place due process protections. That's part of our Constitution. We always protect the due process of Americans. Than, I go to you on this. I think that what I'm hearing is people open and willing to doing something.
Yeah, I hope so, and I hope it extends to Washington, D.C., Jordan, because that's where it's all fallen apart in the past. And I would tell you that we spent a lot of time pushing governors and localities to move forward on things like school security because, quite frankly, Jordan, I have more faith that they're going to be able to get real tangible solutions in place. Look, just to tie the last caller's comments to the president's comments, the president mentioning domestic terrorism is very significant, Jordan, because it enables them to activate the Department of Homeland Security to access those databases where either red flags or mental health concerns have been filed. Now, we know those haven't been filed perfectly in the past, but it at least allows them to use what is there. Jordan, one other point I would just make quickly, reaching back to Ed's call about the media's role in fostering hate, I would just suggest to you that there's a real question we need to ask on a societal level as well. I mean, we really love to hate each other right now, and I would look around the world at the places where the ability to have differing views doesn't exist. Jordan, that's where there's no freedom. That's where tyranny reigns. And we have to understand that vigorous debate, strenuous debate, even heated debate is a positive thing. It's a strength of our society, not a flaw in it. We need to have real relationships with people who disagree with us and then engage on the merit and engage strenuously. But let's let the ideas with merit prevail and not think that everybody needs to look exactly like us. Let's look outside of our box and have relationships with those that disagree. And that will actually strengthen us as a society.
Yeah, I think that, again, this idea that, you know, and listen, I've noticed it in my own life. You can imagine the line of work that I do and what I do on this broadcast and for the ACLJ and in the political world. And it has changed significantly. You know, it's basically now I feel like conservatives kind of have conservative friends and liberals have liberal friends, and there's not a lot of crossover. I mean, maybe that's different for you, but it's certainly something I'm experiencing more and more in the last 10 years than the previous 10. Final segment coming up. We'll take your phone calls at 1-800-684-3110. That's 1-800-684-3110. I don't know that we'll be focused on this tomorrow on the broadcast. There's a lot going on in our country, but this is a day of mourning for our country, and it's a time to just think about these issues. Not one of us can fix it. It's the country coming together, our states coming together, federal government coming together. Partisan rhetoric is not going to change anything either. 1-800-684-3110. If you want to join us on the air, call now.
Only when a society can agree that the most vulnerable and voiceless deserve to be protected is there any hope for that culture to survive. And that's exactly what you are saying when you stand with the American Center for Law and Justice to defend the right to life. We've created a free, powerful publication offering a panoramic view of the ACLJ's battle for the unborn. It's called Mission Life. It will show you how you are personally impacting the pro-life battle through your support. And the publication includes a look at all major ACLJ pro-life cases, how we're fighting for the rights of pro-life activists, the ramifications of Roe v. Wade 40 years later, Planned Parenthood's role in the abortion industry, and what Obamacare means to the pro-life movement. Discover the many ways your membership with the ACLJ is empowering the right to life. Request your free copy of Mission Life today online at aclj.org/gift. At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're engaged in critical issues at home and abroad. Whether it's defending religious freedom, protecting those who are persecuted for their faith, uncovering corruption in the Washington bureaucracy, and fighting to protect life in the courts and in Congress, the ACLJ would not be able to do any of this without your support. For that, we are grateful. Now there's an opportunity for you to help in a unique way. For a limited time, you can participate in the ACLJ's Matching Challenge. For every dollar you donate, it will be matched. A $10 gift becomes $20. A $50 gift becomes $100. This is a critical time for the ACLJ. The work we do simply would not occur without your generous support. Take part in our Matching Challenge today. You can make a difference in the work we do, protecting the constitutional and religious freedoms that are most important to you and your family. Give a gift today online at aclj.org.
I want to start, then we'll get to your phone calls. 1-800-684-3110. You still have time to be a part of the show today as the nation mourns this horrendous loss. If you're just joining us, unfortunately, the number of people killed, murdered by that white supremacist in El Paso has gone from 21. Initially, the number was 20. So 30 people killed this weekend, if you include Dayton in that number, in these mass shootings. That's a lot in one weekend in the United States of America. And again, it's different than violent crimes that may be occurring in big cities, and that you can total up that, yes, there may have been 8 murders in a big city, but they were individual acts. And, you know, again, loss of life is loss of life. But they're different. They're different in nature. You know, there's something different to tackle as a problem, the mass shooting issue specifically versus violent, deadly crime. Let's go to Jenny Lynn calling in from California. Thanks for holding on, Jenny. Jenny Lynn, you're on the air.
Hello, gentlemen.
Hi.
Hi. You know, I used to work as a psychologist. I'm retired now, but you know, through all my years of clients and studying, I realized when we're trying to look at the motive of these men, predicting human behavior is impossible, especially when it's irrational, and because mental illness is irrational. And I think this is more a breakdown of our culture, a cultural issue of our society than... So I just, you know, I believe in gun ownership and protect, you know, right to bear arms, but I just don't know how we can even start to approach this issue.
I know, that's what seems tough, right? It seems like it immediately becomes politicized, it immediately becomes partisan. I think, too, from the mental health aspect, you're right, you cannot predict every action. I would say that some of these individuals, if they were in kind of psychiatric situations, and I don't know that they were, I don't know if we know that information yet or recently that they were, but if you know, if someone's telling you, I'm thinking about, you know, carrying out acts of violence, I think we live in a time now where that could be the line. And it's just like if you were trying to prevent them from taking their own life, if they were suicidal, if you thought that the language they were using or the tone that they were using to describe how they felt sounded violent, that's a line. And I think it's probably changed considerably. And we kind of know these profiles kind of match, similar kind of profiles, white males, certain age categories. Of course, there's always things that throw that off. And I'm not sure, you know, many of them are in getting any kind of mental health treatment once they're adults, but a lot of them did get mental health treatment and therapy when they were younger because schools notified and identified kind of their behavior. President Trump said this, I think it goes right to your point, Jenny Lynn, about the culture that has to change. Byte 17.
Cultural change is hard, but each of us can choose to build a culture that celebrates the inherent worth and dignity of every human life. That's what we have to do.
I mean, it's why we fight against groups like ISIS, because they did not celebrate the inherent worth and dignity of human life. It's why we fought against the Nazis, why we fought against dictatorial regimes. We fight against those who try to commit genocides on those grand states. It's why we take the actions we do internationally. We need to foster that same culture domestically as well, that taking and killing Americans like this, your own countrymen and women, children, that you need a cultural change there. And again, this happens throughout histories in big countries like ours. And I get that, but then, I mean, I think, ultimately, we can all be, we can talk about all these solutions, all this legislation, and I'm not saying it shouldn't be done, by the way, but I think the president's right there. Culturally, we need a shift in how we value human life and dignity.
No question about it, Jordan. I think this is really the fundamental issue. I mean, we believe as an organization, as individuals, that every life has value and dignity, but there are so many ways, insider culture and society where that is not embraced, Jordan. And until you get back to that, until you fix the fabric of the culture in the society, you're going to continue to having these episodes. Look, just to reach back to Jenny Lind's point real quickly as well, I mean, there's no question that balancing the mental health issue is a very tough task. But I would just suggest that in many of these cases, we're not talking about close calls. I mean, we're talking about manifestos that came right out and said what they were going to do and why they were going to do it. So I don't think there was much of a balancing act in many of them. But on the cultural point, I was glad that the president came out that directly and said it, because all of the laws in the world, whether on the federal level, the state level, the local level, all of the laws in the world, Jordan, are not going to fix it if we continue to have a society that is ripped apart and that glorifies, to be quite frank about it, glorifies a hatred and a division with each other. That's really at the core of it.
Yep. Let's take another call. Doug in California, who's in law enforcement. Doug, welcome to Jay Sekulow Live. You're on the air.
Hi. Hi, thanks for taking my call. My suggestion would be this. The person that has the firearm or is applying for the firearm goes through extensive training, should be an 8-hour class. During the first day, you show up with your application, with your background. That means that you're showing up with all your friends' phone numbers, all your coworkers' phone numbers, and the places you have worked. The second day, you meet with a psychologist or somebody that's doing your background check. Also, your application goes into the ATF so that you're doing the background check to receive the gun. During that week, you're going through laws, rules, regulations, everything about the firearm and the liabilities. The following week, if you get past that week and you pass everything, then you go through a comprehensive training, the training of how to use this firearm, what this firearm can do, and what this firearm and how this firearm should be used in those situations that you may have to use it.
Yep.
These are the things that can control the backgrounds. It's extensive. They'll know if there's a psychological issue. You don't pass it. If you want the firearm, you want the concealed, you have to earn it.
And yeah. And Doug, I would say, I think you could look at that and say also, it's very, you know, kind of various levels of handgun versus, which are kind of, you know, known for personal protection. And one, you know, handgun is not going to be able to carry out these kind of attacks with the security that exists. Different than if you are purchasing a semi-automatic weapon. And that may mean that you need to go through that extensive check that you just went through. And I get that, you know, coming from law enforcement, you have to go through those checks to go on the street with your weapon. Pretty consistently. And if you do fire your weapon, you go through those checks once again. If you do so lawfully, which most members of our law enforcement do, but you're put on leave after those incidents. And so I understand your point. And folks, you understand here, I think that there can be levels. It doesn't have to be like all guns or no guns. It could be that none of these weapons are banned, but that there are different processes you have to go through to obtain different levels of weaponry. And I don't know that everybody needs to be opposed to that. No one's stopping you from getting it. Just different levels of training and background check for the more higher power weapon. I'm sure this is a conversation we'll go back to. We'll see if there's anything developing legislative wise that we need to discuss on tomorrow's broadcast. If so, we will. But we wanted to take today to mourn with the nation, to talk about what we think we need to do moving forward. We appreciate you for joining us in that discussion and in that time of mourning. Pray for all of those who have been impacted by this. It is heartbreaking. We'll talk.
At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're engaged in critical issues at home and abroad. For a limited time, you can participate in the ACLJ's Matching Challenge. For every dollar you donate, it will be matched. A $10 gift becomes $20. A $50 gift